There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Lots to do on today's show. And guests will be checking in. We'll be checking in with Mayor Tony Kenem from Orange Beach here at the second half of this hour. I held over my friend Jeff Poore, even though I know he's just finished a three-hour radio show. Held him over to talk a little bit with me because it was the story that Jeff has up on Yellowhammer that when posted to our Facebook page got tons of attention yesterday and a lot of talk on his show today, and it continues. And Jeff, I don't know, and this is a story of specifically what happened in Choctaw County, but a bigger discussion of what has happened in the past, right?
Right. Well, what's happened in Choctaw County that makes this different, and we talked about this, they advertised these practices in a newspaper for all the world to see. Now, you know, I don't know what kind of circulation the Choctaw Sun has, but putting it in a newspaper is certainly going to raise some eyebrows.
Okay, wait, the quote is, if people are not following what we're talking about, is that ad said, anyone that vote early before October 29th, your church will get $6 per person. We will verify if they have registered, and checks will be dispersed after October 29th, right? So there's the text with this ad.
Right, and then about I guess this came out last week, midweek, and then about Saturday, bunch of different members of the legislature from all over the state sending it to me. And I talked to my colleague Sean Ross, and he had already been working on it, trying to connect some dots of who this organization is. But the indications are, and this may be a question for the Attorney General as well, but Beryl and Marshall neither said it was a necessarily illegal. What was going on here, which I, Paul DeMarco, who's the chairman of the Jefferson County Republican Party, and I were talking, maybe it's something the legislature needs to revisit in the future.
Okay, and let's get into the nuance of why, because this conversation is going on related to y'all's stories here, your story, Sean Ross's story about this, and on Facebook. Let's talk about what while the Secretary of State saying it's not illegal, immoral, or unethical, where's the nuance come? Can you pay me $6 for my vote? That's illegal, right?
That's illegal, but the fact that they're not paying the individual person or that they're not paying that the person directly, that it's somehow is, there's nothing in the law that says you can't do it. I suppose.
So, because you're not paying the person directly, in this case, they're saying your church, that entity, that it is legal. And we could talk about down the road and what might need to be done, but right now, this is legal. But the idea here, at least what I'm seeing, is this is just a public manifestation of something that's gone on for a long time. Is that is that realistic? Is that true?
I don't, and that's the dirty little secret. Has this gone on, or is there more going on? That, we've always heard about walking around money, mm-hmm. in some of these rural places when it comes to voting. We've always heard, I was talking to one member of the legislature telling me about what the ADC, the Alabama Democratic Caucus, used to do with their yellow ballot. They would,
So
the yellow ballot, the ADC, that's Joe Reed runs it now, but it's the I guess, the black operation of the Democratic Party historically. And what they would do, they would take a ballot, and they would show, you know, they would distribute it, and but it would tell you where to mark that you, you know, just trust us. You get on this ballot, and we get out the vote. But you know, this is what Democrats ran into in 2018 when these candidates were hit up for cash by Joe Reed. That they would take the ballot, it would be a ballot that would be distributed with exactly who to vote for. Now, most, I would think, in that African American community would vote Democratic Party for the most part, but the way they used to do it is they would incentivize it. They would wrap up the yellow ballot with like cash and maybe a bottle of booze or something like that and distribute it. And that would incentivize, you know, you're not necessarily paying people to vote. You're just using it as a prop,
right,
to
right.
Say, hey, if you're going to vote, here's the ballot. Oh yeah, by the way, here's some here's something for you. The stuff like that's gone on in this state forever, allegedly. But this time it's, you know, and then this time it's different, just because they actually put it in a newspaper of record for Choctaw County.
So it's there. It's legal because it goes to the church, and also it's. I know the quote yesterday when the secretary was on with you said there is no illegal activity associated with what's been presented, but it would be not the best practice, right? Not a best practice, or should not be encouraged. I mean, that's kind of I hate to be this guy. No, I don't. This is the guy I am. Either it's illegal or not. Whether it's a best practice or not, I mean it.
That's a judgment call, right?
Yeah, it's a judgment call. We can't live in that. And we're a nation of laws, not of judgment calls by individuals. What does the law say, and should it be amended?
I mean, that's. I guess his insinuation was, you can. This is going on, and it's not illegal, unethical, or immoral, as he put it. But it not being a best practice is something that he would discourage. The only way is to. Either have an attorney general's opinion or have the legislature come in clarifying what the law means, stating it explicitly that you can't do this. You know, Sean, think about just earlier this year, Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City, a billionaire, ran for president for about 10 minutes before he saw they had no pathway. But in Florida, they voted to allow felons to vote. If you're reformed, mm-hmm. So the convicted felons, but after it's all said and done, the Florida legislature and Governor DeSantis in Florida said, well, you got to pay, you know, if you have old fines, court fees, restitution, you have to pay. You have that to have that paid down before you have the right to vote.
Right.
And Bloomberg comes in and says, I'm just going to pay it all for all these convicted felons so they can have the right to vote. Well, the prosecutors, law enforcement started looking at this and said, is this something is this effort by Bloomberg something to influence the outcome of an election? And I would argue, though in that case he seems to be paying those felons directly, but it does seem
if you have to prove
influencing the outcome of an election, that's what is going on here for sure.
But you have to prove a quid pro quo. I mean, there's not a direction to vote this way, right? I mean, if you pay off the felons and make it or their debts so they can go vote, you're not saying I'm doing this so you'll go vote this candidate or that candidate.
But right, in theory, but what are they actually doing? Is they're trying to get more Democrats to the polls? Isn't that the intent? Are we being too clever here by saying, well, you know, anybody, any church, as Merrill said it, well, white or black or Korean even, could participate in this quote-unquote scheme. So it doesn't say that, but isn't that the kind of the wink and the nod here that, you know, black churches get your parishioners out to vote so they vote Democrat on November 3rd? Or am I imagining this?
There you go. Well, you read more about it over at yellowhammernews.com. Jeff, you got it linked, I'm through your Twitter feed.
Yeah, it's on Twitter. It's on Yellowhammer News up near the top. It's our interview from yesterday with Secretary Beryl. I'd encourage people to go check out the story from Sean Ross. It really kind of details it. He connects the dots to really where what I was saying, that there are Democrat interests here involved where the money is coming from, and he ties it to the I believe he ties it to the Jones campaign. So you can make that call on your own, but I think that you can't go without not asking that question, right?
I think that's fair. Y'all check it out as well on our Facebook page, and we'll continue that discussion. Jeff, thanks for holding over a few minutes for me, and I'll be tuned in tomorrow bright and early.
Anytime, Sean. Thanks for listening, and thanks for having me on.
All right, there we go. There's Jeff, and let him get back to, you know, off-air life. And then we'll grab your calls and texts when we get back, talk more about this. And also that Disney story. I just want to roll this out and get a take from you on that. Oh, and did you see AL.com put up, what is the Doug Jonesiest county in Alabama? We'll answer that as well. Stay right there. Right, 1220 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. On this Tuesday, 2 weeks. I mean, this is 2 weeks from Election Day. Wow. And we're gonna talk a bit more about the amendments later on, starting there a little after 1 o'clock on the show. Go through that. We'll break down some of the other races here outside the federal delegation. I mean, we can run through those, but y'all got those pretty much figured out. But we'll walk through some of the judicial stuff. There's quite a bit on the judicial side. And then we'll dig into amendments, because this is the most confusing part. You often people walk in and they know who they're going to vote for, you know, for people for an office. But you look at the amendments and it's just, you're like, okay, if I vote yes, it may, we'll go through that. And as well, upcoming here in the next week or so, you'll be able to check out videos talking about what the amendments say, what they mean if you vote yes, what they mean if they vote no. We're going to put those on our Facebook page, so we'll be doing those videos and posting them up so you can watch them yourself, share them with, you know, friends, family, whomever. So watch for that on Facebook, but we'll tell you more about that going forward. Coming up at about 12:35, Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kennan is going to join us. I've talked to him, of course, in the aftermath of Hurricane Sally right afterwards a few times. We're going to get an update on what it looks like down there in Orange Beach and the general area and how much it's cost so far. That's the thing that, you know, you go, well, FEMA's coming in. Well, FEMA doesn't pay all this. What's it cost communities to recover from storms like this? All right, so the story I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I just roll through this here. CBS has it. A lot of people have it up. I'm going to read the CBSNews.com version of this. It says, Disney is adding a disclaimer to some of its old movies that include racist stereotypes, the media giant announced this month. The company said that while it can't change he passed. You see that? They put he passed. It would be the past. A typo on CBS.com. That's what happens when you fire everybody. The company said that while it can't change the past, we can acknowledge it, learn from it, and move forward together, end quote. So going forward, several such films on the Disney Plus streaming service will include the following advisory. Here's what it says. This program includes negative depictions and or mistreatment of people or cultures. These stereotypes were wrong then and are wrong now. Rather than remove this content, that would cost them money. We want to acknowledge its harmful impact, learn from it, and spark conversation to create a more inclusive future together, and continue to make money off it at Disney Plus. Right, okay. Disney said the decision is part of its, quote, ongoing commitment to diversity and inclusion. End quote, said rather than removing offensive content, the company said it hopes to spark that conversation of open dialogue in history that affects us all. All right, so now you want to know, okay, which movies? Because there are some I think you could probably go, looks very different here in 2020 to see that than it did then. But the movies that'll now start with a disclaimer include The Aristocats, which features, this is according to CBS, racist caricatures of East Asian peoples. Dumbo, in which the crow characters perform a musical number in the style of a racist minstrel show. Peter Pan, for its stereotypical portrayal of native peoples. And Swiss Family Robinson, which pirates are portrayed as stereotypical foreign menace, many in yellow or brown face. Really? The pirates in Swiss Family Robinson, that's where you... In addition to the older films, so that's not all. They bring it in the 90s. It's also the, they said the start of Aladdin, The Start of Aladdin, the animated blockbuster from 1992, is on their list too. They said the new statement is more strongly worded than one Disney tacked onto its films when Disney Plus first rolled out last year. At that time, it simply noted this program is presented as originally created. It may contain outdated cultural depictions, end quote. Now it admits they were not outdated but wrong even back then, and such negative portrayals had a harmful impact in real life. Disney said it created an advisory council made up of outside experts who help the company, quote, assess our content and ensure it accurately represents our global audiences, end quote. So, did you see, I mean, are there, there's some things you could look back on and go, oh gosh, yeah, that is a stereotype. But you know what? There's a lot of things that are driven in art and theater. You go back to Shakespeare. Are we going to edit Shakespeare? There's a lot of racist content there. The Bard, was really, so we go back and edit that? Or do we need to put a, before somebody presents Hamlet? I mean, do we need to run, there's some things, I'm with you. You see that and you go, oh my gosh, that really, that falls flat in 2020. But if they're down to worrying about the pirates in Swiss Family Robinson, this texture says basically anything that's a caricature or even something like blind mice with a stick and dark glasses counts as outdated cultural depictions. But, you know, the caricature is part of what, it's a tool that was used in telling stories, right? It doesn't make it right, but where does it end? I guess that's the, you know, and I ask this of woke, the woke movement. Off we go. When is it woke enough? When is it woke enough? Because eventually, there are some things that I think we can all, that are fair-minded, good people, will agree that that is unacceptable. This depiction or that depiction, need to say something about that. That is, but then if we're going to get into the pirates in Swiss Family Robinson, and maybe I'm remembering it inaccurately, but so a pirate is a caricature. You know, saying, putting a pirate with a peg leg, that's okay, because you know what? All pirates didn't have peg legs. So you can have no more peg legs or patches over the eyes. Because that's a caricature of a pirate. It's, Disney is on a level, now obviously they got the cash flow, but Disney is on a line like with the woke movement that eventually it will eat itself. Because if Disney now makes this beachhead of the, and of course notice though, the dollars are still important because they didn't drop those Disney products, they just put the disclaimer on it, right? Well, because we know disclaimers will keep people from using, it's like there's a disclaimer on that pack of cigarettes right there. Yeah, nobody's going to smoke those. Eventually, you set these beachheads, and then where's the next and the next and the next thing? Once again, I am not blind. There are parts of culture all over and depictions that are, you're like, oh, man, that's bad. But where do you stop? Where do you stop? I mean, how far back you go? We're going to, should we, if Disney's doing this, should we? Well, somebody's asking about Song of the South. Yeah, Song of the South is, that's one of, you can look at the stereotypes in there and go, ooh, man, that's one level. You turn around and say, well, the pirates in Swiss Family Robinson have yellow and brown faces. So what? So eventually, it will call for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. We'll all be living in unitard. Everybody's going to have like, unitards that are the same color that hide any example of maybe a mask, right? We're in the mask thing. Any example of what the sex of that person may be. And everybody's going to have to be uniformed up and down the line. That's not fun. So while there are real issues to tackle, I know that Disney's on that. Like I said, I'm waiting for the disclaimers before Merchant of Venice. Where's the disclaimer before that, huh? You listening to Shakespeare? Okay, you're not, actually. All right, news, and then we'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Good to talk to Mayor of Orange Beach, Tony Kennedy, as well, and get an update what's happening in South Baldwin County. Mayor, thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you all for having me. You know, I appreciate it every time we get to talk.
Well, I appreciate the efforts that y'all have undertaken. You and I talked, of course, right in the aftermath of Hurricane Sally, and then about a week after that. So I want to kind of catch up, and you help everybody catch up on where y'all are on the recovery process after Sally in Orange Beach.
Yeah, well, let's see. In about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, we had a pretty much a fully functioning city. So I was real proud of our, you know, I've learned I'm good at two things, and that's raising cane and hiring good people and getting out of their way. I mean, in spite of me, these guys, I'm just telling you, they got it done. Crowder Gulf, EMC, the power company, our public works, we've hauled off over 300,000 cubic feet of debris. That's the equivalent of about 18,000 dump trucks. That's 84 miles bumper to bumper.
Wow.
I've been just amazed by what they had. Almost 600 boats displaced. We're down to less than 50. That was a huge fear of ours, was just moving these boats, but that's moved very, very quickly now that we started working with them and came up with some protocols. You know, city's essentially functioning normally. The places on the beach that were damaged enough that they had to shut down, they decided to do renovations and upgrade, which probably is a good thing. Our marinas are still in pretty bad shape, but most of those guys are going to go back with improved docks, floating concrete docks, and things of that nature. So, you know, there's a silver lining in some ways. It's inconvenient and it's costly, but long-term, hopefully it's going to be an upgrade that nets us all a fair return.
Yeah, I want to get to the costly portion, then circle back to some of the other things you talked about. But I hear people just say, well, you know, they've got, it's costly, but FEMA comes in and pays for all that. Not exactly all of that.
No, that's correct. FEMA covers 75% of what they approve. So,
okay, so what? Let's do that. So what do they, when they come in and approve, like, is there a short list of the things they don't approve you could talk about?
Well, it's what where the debris is coming from. You can't go on private property. It's all got to be pulled out to the right of way or on the water's edge. We have hired an engineering company, Thompson Engineering, that FEMA requires a monitoring company. They literally have a rider on every truck, and then they have monitors counting the cubic yards that come in, and then they look at the debris and, okay, well, household garbage, things of that nature, just the stuff that they may not approve,
right,
is taken out of the equation. So we try to adhere to the monitors and the rules and regs. But as with every government and entity, it depends sometimes on who you're talking with as to what's gray and what's black and white. So we try to be very, very specific to meet their regs, which I don't guess that's a bad thing, but it does put it puts a little bit of fear in you that you're doing this, you're on the hook to pay for it all, hoping that they're going to reimburse you.
Wow.
So yeah, right now, you know, on the water's edge, when you're picking up on marine debris, you know, that's questionable for them. So we got to prove that it was a true hurricane debris. It wasn't dilapidated piers, you know.
So that could come back, Mayor. That could come back. I mean, y'all could get these things, and here they are picking them up and getting them gone, and then down the road, FEMA can come back and say, nah, that wasn't within
right.
the definition. Then it's on the tab of the city of Orange Beach.
That's right. They could disqualify anything they feel like was not within the scope of hurricane debris removal or whatever they decide. Now, hopefully they were fair with Ivan, and hopefully they're going to be fair with us this time. I can't complain. But it does sort of make you a little uneasy when you've got millions and millions and millions of dollars of cost and you're waiting for them to approve it after the fact.
Yeah, that is
but
nervous.
You can't wait around either. You know, you got to get it done.
So 75% of what they approve, so the other 25%, even among the approved things by FEMA, is going to come out of Orange Beach.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we split that. The 25% we split with the state, 12.5 each.
Okay.
So, you know, it will amount to millions of dollars for us, over a million and a half, maybe two. And then you put on top of that all of the damaged buildings that we're self-insuring, piers, docks, things of that nature that we have. You know, there's a tab that goes along with it, comes out of our emergency fund. But the that's one reason, you know, everybody talks about how much money Orange Beach has. Well, $30 million of that is set back just for this right here. And this didn't turn out to be the absolute worst-case scenario because we're back on online generating revenue, but that's what it's there for, and that's why we protect it so so dearly, is that we don't want to be on the hook and have to go borrow money to take care of post-hurricane issues.
Yeah, prudent for sure. And as we look at the you talk about the marine infrastructure or you know, waterside infrastructure, how does that look in Orange Beach right now? I know the homes, and we're talking about buildings there, but what about what, you know, I mean, you wouldn't be Orange Beach if it wasn't the water, right? I mean, the things that touch the water.
Yeah, that's what makes us different, you know, in a lot of ways. We do have the past, so we have the charter boat fleet. So Zeke's was pretty much destroyed, which is Sandlot was destroyed, Sportsman, Romar Harbor, then all of the condo marinas on Terry Cove and Cotton Bayou. Then on the north side, all the private residences, all the essentially every pier, dock, and marina was destroyed in Orange Beach, except for the wharf survived pretty well, and then Orange Beach Marina did okay with, you know, they had a good bit of damage, but they weren't totally disrupted like all the others are. They're out of business right now. So, you know, we got a lot of building back on the water's edge, but again, we're putting protocols into place to hopefully expedite permits and permitting to get them going as quickly as possible so that hopefully by spring you know, Memorial Day, we got everybody up and running again. That's our goal.
Well, let's talk about the people that berth their boats there. You mentioned them, the charter boat fleet. I saw from the pictures I saw and a personal account, I know one person that lost their charter boat. I mean, it sunk, and I don't know where the situation is now. What do you hear from your fleet? How many of them have the boats without damage? How many of them are getting repaired? Where's that situation?
Well, I don't know that I can assist that right now. I think most of the boats survived and will be usable again. I don't know what percentage to say was destroyed beyond use, but it wasn't insignificant, and it certainly wasn't insignificant for someone who lost their charter boat, because you don't just go out and replace a charter boat.
Right.
I mean, those are years of modifications to meet that fishing style, the right boat at the right price, because you just don't go out and buy a new boat and charter fish. So the other issue is we don't have a marina for them right now. And so Zeke's was essentially our charter boat home. It's going to have to be completely rebuilt for the most part on the water side. Sandrock carried a lot of charter boats. They're going to have to rebuild. So they're displaced. Now, most of the charter boats that went up on the shore survived, and we've gotten those off and out of people's property and back in the water. They're going under repair, but we got so many boats at the boatyard now. It's a slow process there. And, you know, you lose a charter fleet, that's a big part of who we are. That's what separates us from, you know, a lot of cities on the coast.
Well, and there's, like you said, the same way we've all been talking about, there's only so many roofers that can work right now on people's homes. There's a far smaller number of people that know what they're doing with fiberglass and are fixing these boats.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're exactly right. It's hard to get it done when you don't have the issues of a hurricane.
So. Preach.
Yeah, it is tough.
You talked about the 700-some-odd boats, and you and I had talked about that on a previous show, that were, you know, that were in some cases sitting on streets in Orange Beach. Those have been removed, right? The ones that are on the land have been removed?
Yeah, most of them have. There's a few still in very iffy situations where the landowner, the insurance company for the boat owner are trying to figure out who's responsible for what and moving the boat because, you know, let's say the boat's 3 feet away from the home. Mm-hmm. It's a 70-foot boat or 60-foot boat. And, you know, so everybody's trying to decide who's going to take on the liability of the movement. But that's not many. There's only a very few of those. Most everybody, you know, we made it clear, y'all got to figure this out. Lawyers can fight it out later, but we got to get the boats moved and get this thing going. And for the most part, insurance companies got on board. The attorneys worked it out. The homeowners worked it out. And everybody worked together to get us moving, and that's really, really appreciated, because I could see a quagmire of everybody in a spitting match over who was going to be responsible for what. So I'm very appreciative of all the parties involved getting those things moved.
What about unclaimed boats? I know that had been a story at one point. Do you still have unclaimed boats?
Well, a lot of the boats
that may be unclaimed were debris, essentially. Anyway, they were just destroyed. Gotcha. To the point you just haul them off to the landfill. The ones that are not going to be claimed, the city will be responsible for. We'll take them on. Crowder Gulf, our debris contractor, will be removing those. Most of those have been taken care of. There's still some out there that we're sorting through the process of a derelict boat, which is a cumbersome legal process. But the great thing about that is ALEA, the Marine Police, the Coast Guard, all the state agencies have really got on board and helped us expedite that process, which is refreshing. And I mean, I can't brag on the state in this situation for working with us in the fashion they had to help us expedite everything we had to do. And you know, that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, I can't complain. This has been really good. They trusted us, relied on our judgment and how to move forward, and told us to do it. I'm really pleased, and I really am happy that at 35 days, just a little over that 30-day mark, you know, we got 90%+ of all the debris up. And
that's impressive.
I can't brag enough on all the folks involved.
What about in the waters? I'm thinking about, you know, whether they be boats or part of houses, my gosh, or somebody's pier. What about the navigation situation? Have you heard from Marine Police? Have they, or Coast Guard, have they made any judgment down there on navigation, issues?
I don't think that we really see any. I think for the most part, all the channels are clear. I think where we're concerned, and we were actually having that conversation today about setting up sonar scanning and a work boat specifically to survey our canals, our out of the channel bars and sandbars, and along the shoreline, just to see what's in the water, document it, and then allow private landowners to see what's in front of their property and try to find a way that we work together to get all of that out. A lot of that stuff gets buried in the sand very quickly, and it's not something that has to be removed.
Gotcha.
But we do think it's something we want to undertake to just try to make sure that we clean as much as we possibly can within reason and within reasonable cost.
Talking to Mayor of Orange Beach, Tony Kennan, talking about the recovery in Orange Beach. Let's talk about that, the other jewel that makes Orange Beach Orange Beach, and that is the beach. Mayor, last time we talked, you said there's going to be some work to do on that beach.
Yeah, you know, the term, we just finished our survey. You know, with FEMA, you have to do a certain type of survey, which estimates the volume of sand lost. And they changed that. This is something they have changed the rules on it, sort of not to our advantage. But we lost this guy. The term is deflated beach. So we've lost volumes of sand, especially not at the water's edge as much as actually up toward the dune line, where most people would sunbathe. So we're going to have to deal with that, and that's going to be a cost to us. Because, you know, what we don't know now is with the new calculations, it won't be the same as what FEMA paid for before. And to get the beach back to the volume we think it needs to be and what they think it needs, there may be a delta in between. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that's going to fall on our shoulders to pay for. And, you know, that could be $1 million, that could be $5 million. I just don't know. But it's got to be done. You got to have a beach.
Yeah.
So we're going to move forward with that one way or the other, no matter what the news is, but it has to be done. And you've heard me say this over and over and over, these are Alabama's beaches, not our beaches. It's incumbent upon us to be good stewards and to do what it takes to get them back where they need to be.
Yeah, it's something for people to understand, too. You talk about Alabama's beaches, for sure. And I'll just say it. I'm not going to let you say get in trouble with the state, but, you know, they're matching 12%. I think they should match the entire 25% with the amount of revenue they get from Baldwin County, but that's a whole other discussion. But rebuilding the beach.
Please, I'll let you carry that that torch for me, bro.
Well, I mean, it's just true. The numbers are what they are.
Yeah.
But the beach, the ownership, when the governor will talk about closing a beach or this or that, people need to understand where that breakdown is. The state does own a portion of it, but then not all of it. I mean, there's private property and city property, right?
Well, with in Orange Beach, now Gulf Shores has their own city beach that they've had since, you know, 50, 60 years or whatever, how long. The difference is there is a magical line, and it's essentially the mean high tide line. South of that line is all state property. From that mean high tide line up to the road is private property.
what? So you don't. If you buy a beachfront, you don't own all the way to the water.
Right.
You own to the mean high tide line, and then essentially the state has an east-west or a corridor that's all public that runs the entire length of the beach in Alabama. So, when the governor says she's going to close down the beaches, she has the right to close down the beaches literally below the mean high tide line.
Right. You could still be on your private property. You just couldn't go touch the water.
No. Your private property pretty much ends at the mean high tide line.
Right.
It becomes public south of that.
Right. So you could be, I mean, there might be sand under your feet, but you can't get to the water if the state
was. You can't get to the water, no. No, you don't have access to the water because you have to go on the public beach.
Now, with that rebuild process, you talked about those numbers. Does the state come in and, I mean, do they say, okay, well, we're rebuilding, here's the part we're rebuilding below, well, the mean high tide line might have changed, right, with the erosion of the sand?
Yeah, and that's, we don't know how that's going to work, but generally they pay their share, we pay our share, and FEMA does. That's how it's worked in the past, and everybody's been happy. But I don't know what this means here now with, like I said, what they're willing to pay for, what FEMA 75% will cover, and what percentage over that do we have to pay now that they don't determine to be right for reimbursement. That's the concern, you know.
That is
so
what
it's hard to describe, but, you know, if you got, let's just say you got 8 feet of depth of sand at the dune line, mm-hmm. and now it's down to 5. Well, the FEMA says, well, 5 is all you need or 6 is all you need. Well, do we pay for the other 2 feet on top of that because we think that volume is necessary to protect the structure? So mm-hmm. we're going to figure this one out going forward. I'm not sure where we're going to be.
And those dunes show themselves, I mean, storm after storm, to be very important for protecting.
Absolutely. They absolutely made all the difference in the world this time around. And the fact that all of, you know, in Ivan, we had a lot of the older stick-built buildings and different amenities that just washed away. Most everything we have now is built to an extremely high standard. And short of the pools, the amenities on the backside, you know, we just didn't have that much damage. So we feel really good about protecting the beach with a storm, protecting our beachfront revenue generators, and be able to get back online quickly because of our building codes.
And you feel, like you said at the beginning of our discussion, that you will be back. Well, you're back and running right now, but you'll be ready for everybody come spring break or the spring season into Memorial Day.
Yeah, we should be ready. Most everybody that's offline that is renovating, redoing, should be back online by spring break. That's their plan. So, but as far as the city goes, we're normally functioning every day, other than the haulers on the road still hauling the debris. But yeah, we've been online for 2 weeks now. Probably 70-75% of all the accommodation rooms are back online, give or take. So we bounced back really quickly. Everything worked really well this time.
Yeah, first snow hits up in the northern part of our country, those people will be ready to come down to Orange Beach. So it's good that you got facilities
exactly.
open.
Exactly. Yeah. COVID or no COVID, huh?
That's right. So, they're coming.
Well, hopefully, snowbird season, that'll be after election, so COVID will go away by then.
Most likely.
It won't be an issue.
There, as always, I appreciate our time with you, and we'll call you back and keep checking on you as we make our way through the fall and into winter.
Hey, buddy. Thank you so much, Sean. And y'all need anything, just holler.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Will do. There he is, Mayor of Orange Beach, Tony Kennan, with an update. It's good to hear. I mean, what a recovery so far, you know? But it's one of these things we talked about for 35 days. Recovery doesn't happen overnight. We're not going to forget those folks recovering. Whether you're in Orange Beach or you're in Lillian, you're in Somerdale, you're in Dolphin Island, we don't forget it. It's every day in your lives. We get that. All right. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, and coming up next hour, which is just minutes away from next hour, we're going to run through some amendments that you'll be looking at the ballot on November 3rd, since we're 2 weeks out from Election Day. So we'll run through these, plus upcoming a series of Facebook videos where we do it with a camera in our face. Because that's what kids are into these days. So we'll do those as well. But we'll run through the audio version of that's coming up here in just a few minutes. Also, remember our star ID discussions? the past about how they've been there's an extension on Star ID. We'll talk about that a little bit. Also, where is the Doug Jonesiest county in Alabama? Which one do you think it is? We'll talk about that as well. It's all coming up in just minutes. Stay right there.